All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoon's Namus. We have a rare opportunity. We have the 100th individual who has served on Indiana Supreme Court in the House. Brent Dixon is the 100th justice on the Indiana Supreme Court. He was appointed in 1986 by then Governor Bob Orr. Mr. Dixon was then a lawyer in beautiful Lafayette, Indiana. He was born in Gary, grew up in Hobart, Indiana, went to Purdue, where he got his bachelor's, went to the IU Law School here in Indianapolis, where he got his law degree, and then ended up on the Supreme Court as the 100th justice. He is the senior person. He was elevated to Chief Justice a couple of years ago at the retirement of Randall Shepard. And he is here in his first interview, basically concerned about something that all of you are concerned about. And we were joking during the break that we don't know whether the Chief Justice arranged for the last caller to call or it was the good Lord himself saying, Chief Justice is going to be here. Let me give an example of pro bono. We are honored to have the Chief Justice of our Indiana Supreme Court, Brent Dixon, in the house. Mr. Chief Justice, welcome.
Amos, it's a delight to be here. I'm glad to be able to be a resource to you and your listeners as I may.
One of the things that I think we try to tell listeners on the show about different institutions in this country and in this state is that everyone has a boss except God Almighty. And people will call and have questions about the law. They'll have calls and questions about attorneys. And we always tell them that if you got a concern about an attorney, their boss is the disciplinary commission. Their boss is the Supreme Court. What is the court's role in terms of regulating and disciplining, if necessary, the attorneys, those who have been admitted to the bar in this state?
Indiana's constitution assigns certain jobs to the court. And one of those jobs is not only admitting lawyers to be lawyers, mm-hmm. passing the bar exam, grading right. them, and getting them in, but also disciplining lawyers. Mm-hmm. So the court establishes the rules mm-hmm. for the lawyers mm-hmm. and disciplines the lawyers when complaints are made and they go through the disciplinary commission.
Mm-hmm. So is it sometimes – it's like if somebody goes in the store and the service they get in that store is not – not up to par in the eyes of the consumer. The consumer can complain to the manager, a district manager, or a home office. Is that similar with the disciplinary commission and the court's role in regulating lawyers? That, from a consumer standpoint, if you're not satisfied with the job, you have that right to say, "Hey, guys, look at this."
It's exactly right. The consumers, the clients,
right.
If they have a problem with a lawyer, they think a lawyer is not treating them right or unethical, they report that like the job, like the boss in the store, they right. report it to what we call a disciplinary commission. Our website gives the addresses right. for that can be accessed. And they turn in a complaint, and then the disciplinary commission, which is actually made up of not only the staff, but they're made up of a panel of people which include non-lawyers mm-hmm. and lawyers.
Right.
They look at the case and they decide whether or not there's been a mistake made, and if so, they turn it into the Supreme Court for a decision about what to do about it.
One of the things that people assume, they assume that an attorney gets a law degree, they pass the bar, and that they have no further responsibilities to society after that. What are the responsibilities? Once you admit an attorney to the bar of Indiana, what are their responsibilities?
Good question. When a lawyer becomes a lawyer, they take an oath mm-hmm. to do certain things. And they also are obligated to follow the rules of professional conduct. Mm-hmm. Those are their guidelines.
Right.
And if they fail to follow those rules, they can be disciplined. Mm-hmm. One of the obligations, both in that oath and in the rules of conduct, is to provide free legal services to people in need.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the responsibilities they need to live up to.
Are consumers or people out there listening, citizens of Indiana, residents of Indiana, confused? Do they assume that when they hear pro bono that they can just go to an attorney and say, "Hey, I have no money. My case is wonderful. You, out of the goodness of your heart, pro bono, ought to take my very complex case and do it for nothing"?
Some people think that.
Mm-hmm. And, what's the reality?
And as a lawyer, during my years of practice in Lafayette, a lot of people would come to my door and say just that.
Mm-hmm.
And lawyers are used to that. Okay. If that happens, some lawyers are able to take those cases. If they're too complex or if they have other problems, they may not be able to. So we have the various organizations that have been set up to help to help coordinate the assignment of lawyers to cases, to get the right lawyer to the right case, and to help people find some resource. But, yeah, individual lawyers can hear a citizen come in and say, I need a lawyer and I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. And an individual lawyer certainly can do that.
And pro bono is different than public defender.
It is. Let me tell you why.
Okay.
The public defender system is on the criminal side. When someone is accused of a crime and they face the possibility of jail time, mm-hmm. that's the criminal side.
Okay.
The pro bono term, and that's it's a Latin term which really means just volunteer. It means for free.
Mm-hmm.
For the goodness of things. And so we use this word pro bono, but it really means free legal services on the civil side.
This is the non-criminal side.
This is the stuff out of divorces, out of fights between two people they want to sue for damages, a boundary dispute between neighbors, a dog problem, divorces, custody, anything other than the criminal side involving jail time.
Okay, so if those of you out here hearing pro bono, if you rob a bank, no. If you were accused of drinking and driving, which is a criminal offense, no. But sort of what Amber was talking about with the leash ran out and she's dead seven days. She's 7 days late because somebody ripped her off of the rent money. That could be pro bono.
Exactly.
We're with the Chief Justice of Indiana, Brent Dixon. One of the issues that comes up with the community and their relationship with the legal profession. And this is maybe more on the criminal side than the civil side. And that is the difference between the role of the defendant, particularly if the defendant is an adult, and the role of the family member of the defendant, where a lot of times the family member wants to basically be the client and drive what goes on. From the administration of justice's point of view, is it really, when you're in a lawyer-client relationship, is really lawyer, client, and family, you've got to be in the background?
Basically, yes. We most often see this conflict in the case of juvenile law, when we have families that want to do one thing for their child, and a child may want to do something quite a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyer in that situation is in a little bit of a conundrum, but his duty is to represent his client.
His client.
Which is the young person.
Could it also be with the adult where the defendant, maybe he knows something he ain't told mama, and he ain't told daddy, and he ain't told grandma, and grandma is looking at the attorney wanting, they want Matlock. They want Perry Mason. They want all the... And maybe that lawyer knows a little something because the lawyer has talked to the client and they're not supposed to divulge what they talk to the client to mom and dad and the family.
Tricky situations, our lawyers get to be pretty good at handling that pretty well and basically saying what you just said to grandma and say, hey, I know stuff in this case that I can't tell you about, but trust me, I'm doing this because my job is to help your grandson or whatever.
Should it be, because sometimes I think that attorneys, sort of like police officers, don't want to give family members bad news. So they end up saying nothing to make people feel good. So what you just said, Chief Justice, I bet some lawyers and public defenders don't tell mama and grandma that because you're feeling, I don't want to upset the situation. They're under a lot of stress. I want to try to be good. And sometimes being good, you don't tell the truth. And I'm from the school of, I'd rather tell you the truth. You may not like the truth. I tell this to police chiefs and public safety directors. If somebody calls and you're on a cold case and there's been nothing changed, tell them the truth, that nothing has changed. They may not like to hear that, but they'll appreciate down the road that you at least were honest with them.
Could not agree more.
239-1310, 239-1310. All right, I'm got to be real careful because he really can't talk to you. You know, if he can't. He's the head of the court system of the great state of Indiana. Theoretically, anything could come before him. So he can't talk about any specific case in the now and the future. And he can't talk about anything that's past because one or two things happened. It hadn't gotten to him yet.
or it got to him, and he's only going to comment on what he wrote in the opinion.
So 239-1310. So with those restrictions, and I'll be real ruthless because, you know, anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310. What kinds of pro bono services are available for people here in central Indiana?
We have various outstanding legal services that are available for free to people that are done by well-intentioned lawyers who are willing to commit and do work. One of them is by the Indianapolis Bar Association, right, which is a group of lawyers that work in Indianapolis. And they are doing fantastic work in providing free legal services. One of the biggest things that they do is their Ask a Lawyer program, which is tomorrow, in fact.
Right.
And that's the one in which from 2 to 6 in the afternoon tomorrow at 11 different Indianapolis public libraries.
You're going to be at 11 libraries?
At 11 libraries.
Uh-oh.
And the people of Indianapolis can go in and talk to a lawyer for free.
For free?
For free.
And then what if that lawyer says, hey, wait a minute, you got a case. Is that lawyer allowed to follow up on it? Or can they refer it to somebody or walk people through?
They can, although the lawyer's commitment really is for the initial interview.
Mm-hmm. And there are other different things being done at different parts of the state. Give us some examples. I was looking down there as up in District A. They have like a free breakfast where they kind of walk people through. So there's different things that different attorney groups do around the state.
We have organized the state into different pro bono districts, and they all have the independence to come up with their own programs that fit their demographics, their mm-hmm. people of that area.
I know. I think there was the New York Times that had an article, you know, a week or so ago that said that people are starting to look at, is it time to reform law school education? Is it time to get them to graduate in 2 years rather than three? Are there things law students that are in their final year could be doing that perhaps they're not practicing law, but they get awful close to that? Is that the kind of discussion that if law schools were starting to deal with that, is that something where the court would want to weigh in an opinion, or is that something where the legislature would have to make the decision?
Because, as I said a little bit earlier, the Constitution gives that job to the courts.
Okay.
We have to decide. But other states have done a lot of this. New York State now is requiring law students who want to become lawyers to do 50 hours of pro bono services before they can even take their bar exam.
Oh. So you can't even take the bar unless you get – should we look at that rule here in Indiana?
We are. We're looking at all sorts of possibilities to try to make more pro bono available for more people.
We're talking with Chief Justice Brent Dixon. One of the challenges to society today – is all this social media, all this electronic stuff that we all get wrapped up in. You know, I know in my business, you know, I got a Facebook page that I got to have. I have a Twitter account that I have to have. But because of who I am, I don't have full First Amendment rights. I have to be careful of what I say on this live microphone, even though the federal government and the FCC is shut down. I still have to be careful at what I say. I have to be careful at what I say on social media. I even have to be careful what I say in print in the Indianapolis Recorder. That's because, you know, I'm a public figure, I'm in broadcasting, and I work for a corporation that loves to send me a check every other week. For a long time, I think lawyers thought, you know, once they got the bar, you're a lawyer, you can almost, as long as you follow the little rules of the game, you know, and you act nice in the courtroom and you are responsible to your clients and you met those parts of the ethics, you could do anything you want to. Do lawyers today have to be even more careful because if they're on social media, if they got a Twitter account, if they're blogging and what have you, that the same kinds of straitjackets that I might be under, or an employee of Lilly who's on a Facebook page or blogs, that attorneys are under those same straitjackets? May be the wrong word, Chief Justice, but
this is interesting, Amos, because it's such a new thing that we're all dealing with. Mm-hmm. Judges are dealing with it too. Right. Lawyers are dealing with it. The opportunity that you could accidentally say something that you're not supposed to say. You know yourself, a lawyer cannot talk about a confidence, something that comes to the lawyer from his client,
right,
or from her client. She cannot speak about that to other people. But mm-hmm. if you put it on your social media site, you're suddenly violating that obligation. Judges have to deal with this very carefully because some states, Florida, for example, says to judges, don't be on social media at all because it is potentially unethical. People might be giving you information about a case that the other side doesn't hear about that would violate your rule to be fair and impartial and only hear cases from in court. So Florida judges aren't allowed to be on social media at all. Many states have different approaches to that. We discourage our judges in Indiana from doing it, but they can do it if they wish to do it, and they're very careful about
it. Is that an area that the court, you know, is concerned about? Because even I know if, you know, as a media person, if I get information off the record, there are limits to what I can do with that information, and there's sanctions that can be held against me if information is given to me in confidence and I break that confidence. So similar things?
Very similar. And you can certainly imagine how you'd feel if you were in a lawsuit with somebody else and that other person was able to give the judge private information you didn't know about. We don't allow that. That's just not part of the process.
239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. All right. We're going to test the limits of jurisprudence and the efficacy of the law. Let me go to Kamal. Let me give my Miranda warning. He cannot comment on any active case, any pending case, or any cases that have been in the past because everything could eventually get up to his desk. Hi, Kamal.
Hey, Amos. How you doing?
I'm fine.
All right. My question is, I got a buddy. He has three sons and three daughters. Three of them who live here in Indiana with him. Three of them who live in Arizona. Mm-hmm. He pays child support for all six of them. And as you can see, it's so hard as in the economic situation to take care of the kids, whether you have a decent job or not. But he's having trouble because he's been paying child support for all six of them for the last 18 months, and he has custody of three of them. And I was wondering, where would he go to get some type of pro bono legal services to help him with a case to where he can get his child support lowered to where he can make a better quality of life for the three kids that he has and the three kids here and the three kids that he have in Arizona.
So he needs help in going into court and asking for a modification. Would that be something? What's he doing tomorrow from 2 to 6?
Read my mind.
Tomorrow from 2 to 6?
Yes, sir.
We work second shift.
Oh, and second shift is from when to when?
2:30 to 11 o'clock.
Oh, see, they need maybe the Indianapolis Bar needs second shift. Ask a lawyer. Chief Justice, that doesn't work because we want him working.
Well, the ask a lawyer part won't work for those hours, but there are other organizations that can provide the contact, the pro bono lawyer to help out. And here are some of them. Of course, the one for serving all of Indianapolis area is the Heartland Pro Bono Council, and they
Heartland.
Pro Bono Council?
Yes. And their phone number is 400-7435. And we also have the Indiana Legal Services Organization, which provides help, just like you're talking about, with family law, consumer law, senior law, housing issues. And their number is 631-9410. The Indianapolis Legal Aid Society can provide help with family law. And this, what you're talking about, your friend's problems, it falls into the area we call family law. Mm-hmm. So there are several, and there are other organizations as well, but those are just three possibilities that he can contact to try to get some help.
All right, Kamal, those numbers, 400-7435, that's Heartland Pro Bono. And then my friends down at Indiana Legal Services, they're really going to love this one, 631-9410. And when either you call or your friend calls, you tell them you talked to me and Chief Justice Dixon. That might open up a door.
Okay.
That you was referred by us.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Justice Dixon.
Chief Justice.
All right. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. After his name is, let me go to Greg. Hi, Greg.
How you guys doing today?
We're fine.
I got a question for you here. If a lawyer has been put on disciplinary action in the state of Indiana, he does something wrong, a person complains, It goes to the Public Revenue Board. They ruled that he can't, you know, I just pick a number, can't do lawyership for 4 years. Can he go to Chicago during that time and do lawyership?
Good question, Greg. The answer is no.
Okay.
Most states, in fact, all states that I know of, have agreements with each other in which they hold you accountable as a lawyer. If you're not able to practice in Indiana, you can't practice in Ohio or Kentucky or Chicago or
all
any
right.
place else.
Yes, I was wondering about that. And I want to know, is there anything on the website where when lawyers are on disciplinary action, they have a list of them, so if you actually get one of them, which I actually did, that you would know off the bat that they bad news and you ought to change your lawyer?
The good news is that with all this computer stuff that's been happening, we have been able to make it possible now, maybe not when it happened to you, but now you can go on our website, on the clerk of court's web, to the what's called the roll of attorneys. That's a list of all the lawyers, and it'll tell you if somebody has been suspended or they are not properly in active status of being a lawyer.
And that's under I'm on the website for courts.in.gov, and that would be under – I got staff helping me out. Where would they be? We're going to find out exactly.
I think she's going to take you to the clerk of courts website and the roll of attorneys. This technology is moving so fast, it's hard for all of us to keep up.
This is how we learn.
The easiest way. Right up here.
Maybe you need to put that on the homepage, roll of attorneys. See, this is how we learn stuff. Check their bar status.
Bear with us, Greg. We're working on it right now for you.
I know. You think everybody's honest and everybody isn't. This bottom line, you know, it's sad.
Yes.
I think the easiest to do, Greg, is you do a Google search and you search Indiana Roll of Attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can type in their name. You can either type in their name or if you know their – every attorney has a number?
You bet.
Like a license number?
That's right.
Are they required if you go to an attorney's office to say, hey, what's your number? And they have to provide that?
They do. They have every document a lawyer signs, they have to put their own.
Oh, that's that number.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So if you ever got – if you get sued, when you get the little sue thing, there's supposed to be a number next to the lawyer. See the things I'm learning. I appreciate it, Greg. Thank you. Let me go to Anonymous at 239. See, we're like the legal system. Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
Hey, Amos, I'm seeking help. I had a home built approximately about 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when they poured walls and the footings, I dressed a grade on the backyard. I know we don't have a lot of time, but I've been having issues with this home, and I'm still under warranty. I contacted the Attorney General's office.
Okay.
They hooked me up with a mediator. The mediator sent me a letter and said that it's nothing that they could do because they didn't respond to their letter.
That you didn't respond?
No, the builder.
Okay, so they tried to mediate, and the builder didn't respond. Then it probably – you're right on the borderline between small claims, I think, depending on how much damage may have been done, and a real lawsuit. You're right on that borderline. And I got to be real careful of what the Chief Justice can or cannot say.
Okay,
what are you doing tomorrow between 2 and 6?
Nothing at all.
Well, we got a job for you now.
We got a job for you to do. Is what side of town do you live on?
On the east side.
Do we know? Let me get the list of libraries. On the east side, you're off of 38th?
No, I'm off of 21st between German Church and Cumberland Road.
Okay. You know where the Warren Library is?
Exactly.
Be at the Warren Library tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock, I'll be there.
There'll be lawyers tomorrow.
Okay.
That can at least look at and talk to your situation and see which way you need to go.
Yeah, because, I asked about my realtor.
Right.
When these issues has first started up, and they gave me the number. I talked to the realtor. He said the only way he comes out is that they have an issue. So I picked my own realtor. I told him, I said, well, I want to bring a realtor on.
But if you've got, but you have a written warranty, correct?
Yes, sir.
See, everything is going to be on what the gobbledygook is in that warranty.
And that lawyer at the Warren Library is going to be able to talk with you and give you some straight shooting on where do you go from here.
So you do have a copy of the warranty, correct?
Yes, I have.
Bring
closing papers, everything.
Bring the warranty, bring the closing paper, and bring that letter that the attorney general's people, that the mediator sent you.
Okay. 2 o'clock tomorrow.
They're from 2 to 6. I want you to be there
We need to get something going on. I mean, I'm not the only one in this subdivision that they're just doing this to. They won't bring a realtor. They let you meet a realtor, and then at my closing, they tell me I didn't even have a realtor.
Wait, hold on a minute. Is any of Uncle Sam's money, any FHA involved in you on this house?
Yeah, I believe so.
Then you also need to talk to the United States Attorney's Office. No joke. There could be some wrongdoing here. And the Chief Justice has now really got quiet, and for all the right reasons. But I'm being very serious. You need to call the United States Attorney's Office.
Okay.
Because there could be some mess. You follow me?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Because
the U.S. Attorney's Office.
You look up the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Okay.
That's Joe Hogsett's folks.
Okay.
Okay?
I will do. I'm going to go in the house and look at them right now, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 239-1310. 239-1310. One of the things, Chief Justice, is we look at how people interact with the law. How much influence, and I know you all allow cameras and microphones in your hearings when you're hearing oral arguments.
Yes, we do.
And it, and I don't see anybody showboating or anything, you know, that. But people's view of courts and attorneys are influenced by what they watch on television. How much of that, as you go to conferences and talk to your counterparts in the 50 states and Washington and the territories, how much of a concern is that people's view of the law and how it works is flavored by what they see fictionally on television?
Amos, you'd be amazed at how much that is very true. You know, I come from the days of Perry Mason, mm-hmm. and lawyers being pretty polite to one another and courteous. Mm-hmm. What you see on television and movies today is a lot of lawyers yelling and screaming at each other, mm-hmm. It is not the way it really is,
right.
But it does tell people what to expect. And so many times people go expecting a lawyer to wage a duel with the other side when, in fact, the best lawyer for them is going to be somebody who can be effective without waging a war.
And I know we have experimented in Indiana in limited tests with cameras in courtrooms, and the decision has been it's not for us. Has the court looked at reexamining that, or is the feeling of the court that, hey, at the appellate level, at the Supreme Court level, it's cool, but let's leave the cameras out of our local superior and municipal courts?
That is something we're still doing. We're still looking at that. There are two or three pilot projects going on right now.
Right.
One is going on up in Gary and using the Valpo University Law School to be part of the program. And their report, and the Hammond Times, the Times of Northwest Indiana, is a major player there. They're putting together this report for us right now. Mm-hmm. So we are on an ongoing basis looking at it. And remember that the five members on my court, and the Indiana Supreme Court has five judges.
Right.
There's all five of us have an equal vote and equal say. And so from time to time, there'll be 3-2, 4-1, 5-0 on any one issue. And that's the same with cameras in the courtroom. It'll change from time to time as to whether we think the time is right to go to cameras in the trial courtrooms in our individual counties.
The court has had a lot of turnover in this past year. What's it like with a court with three new members?
fascinating. We've got these three new members, all within the last 3 years, mm-hmm. and two of them in the last year and a half. They include two lawyers that have come right from county seat trial court positions, either mm-hmm. juvenile court judge or a regular mixed court judge of everything, and they bring a whole lot of experience that Justice Rucker and I have not been in touch with for many, many years. And so they bring new ideas and new approaches, and it's neat to see their enthusiasm. They're hard workers. The court is much better because of the youth and the enthusiasm and the energy of these people.
Walk listeners through, because they hear how the Supreme Court in Washington works. How do you guys work? So if tomorrow you're having a hearing and attorneys come to you with oral arguments, then what happens after that oral argument?
We will have three oral arguments tomorrow.
Okay.
And we'll hear one at a time. Each side is given 20 minutes to present their case. Mm-hmm. And when we finish the three arguments, we go back in the court conference room, which is there in the statehouse behind mm-hmm. the courtroom, and we will discuss that case. We'll go around the table, mm-hmm. and each justice will have their own say about mm-hmm. how they think it should come out or what their problems are. And we keep going around until everybody's done talking, and mm-hmm. then we take a vote, and three votes is a majority, and whoever wins three votes, then one of those three people will write the court's decision.
There's a lot of people don't realize that at the Supreme Court level, there's a lot of writing and research in what you guys have to do in terms of making a decision. Is that correct?
That is right. We're only in court, so to speak, one morning a week. The mm-hmm. rest of the time is all writing and research back and forth in our opinions.
Theoretically, you have the conference. Somebody goes off. Do minds get changed? Or once y'all leave the room, that's the way it's going to be?
Minds get changed at different points. Yes, they do get changed throughout. Mm-hmm. We get all the lawyers' papers, mm-hmm. and we review those before we even go into the courtroom.
That's the briefs of saying, hey, guys, this is why I think my argument is the best argument.
Exactly right. And mm-hmm. we look at all of those initially and decide, hey, do we want to even hear this case argued? Mm-hmm. And we make a decision there. When we talk about that in our conference again, which is every week, right. Oftentimes, one person, one justice, will say something that changes other minds. Mm-hmm. When we go to the argument session, it is not unusual. I would say that there, 1 in 10 ends up with at least one or more of the justices going into the courtroom argument with their mind made up in one direction and their minds being changed by something they learned in the course of that argument. And they come back, and quite often the whole court will change its view, at least enough to shift from a 3-2 to a 2-3 majority. So it does happen. Minds do change. The arguments are helpful.
Two final questions. One, what's been the reaction of the bar to your call that there needs to be more pro bono here in Indiana?
Terrific. The bar has been very helpful. The State Bar Association, the organization of all the lawyers, next week are going to be considering a resolution that their leadership has approved that would have lawyers file annual reports mm-hmm. of how much voluntary pro bono work they do.
Uh-oh.
And they're interested in helping us in other ways to boost the pro bono participation. The Indianapolis Bar Association is with their Ask a Lawyer program and various other initiatives they're doing, Amos, they are stepping up to the plate, and they're providing more and more pro bono. The lawyers are very serious about helping because they know that people need to have a lawyer. They ought not go into court without a lawyer if they possibly can avoid it. And so it's our obligation as lawyers to do everything we can to put a lawyer to a client so that a client has legal help.
Your predecessor was very outspoken in terms of improving the diversity of the legal profession here in Indiana, more not only female judges, but more judges of color. Are you continuing that commitment of your predecessor?
We are very strongly. We have expanded and are doing more work in our area of our CLIO program, which is an effort to get minority and other people to go to law school and to mm-hmm. become lawyers. We're now trying to energize that so that it reaches down into the high schools and gets students more Indiana high schools and Indiana colleges, gets more kids who want to be lawyers, provide them with the equipment, and even gives them some monetary help to help them pay their way.
Chief Justice, it's an honor and a privilege. In the years we've been broadcasting down at the State House, we would usually come on State of the Judiciary Day, and I would see you second behind the chief, because it's always been like, you know, the person that's old, you know, that has a senior on there, comes behind the Chief Justice, and you probably walk back, why is that guy standing there next to us with the microphone? But it's an honor and a privilege to have you on the program. It is rare that Chief Justices of any Supreme Court of the sovereign states of our country speak on the media. So we appreciate the opportunity. You are always welcome back anytime to let the people of Indiana, let our community take some of the mystery out of the law. I appreciate it. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Amos Brown. You are a tremendous help to our community and its citizens. Thanks.
I guess that means the honorary law degree has been renewed. I can still be an honorary lawyer and not be on the roll of bad honorary lawyers. Open lines the rest of the way out. 239-1310. 239-1310 is After News with Amos for a very busy Monday.